One of the first things modern citizens do each morning, according to our next guest, is get cancer. When we shower, we bathe and then cover ourselves in a witch's brew of contaminants that are either suspected or known to be toxic, carcinogenic or allergenic. Chemicals are in our food, our water, the air we breathe and everything we touch. Last year, an international team estimated there were 350,000 chemicals registered for production and use, but it's hard to say for sure because tens of thousands are shrouded in secrecy. It's a multi-trillion dollar industry, and it's only getting bigger. Julian Cribbs, author and science writer, who says we've unleashed a chemical tsunami on the world with potentially catastrophic implications for humanity. His book, Earth Detox, does make for grim reading, but it also argues we have a chance to stop what we're doing. Julian's in North Canberra. Hi, Julian. Welcome.
G'day, Catherine. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. You write at the beginning of the book, we might know of some isolated incidents where things have happened. We see big dramatic chemical spills or polluted sites or toxins in our food. But the point of this book is to provide an oversight and really about the pervasiveness of chemicals in our lives. Is that what you set out to do?
Yes, it is. I mean, basically, I've written for the last 10 or 15 years about the 10 mega risks, 10 catastrophic threats that are facing the whole of the human species. Climate is just one of them, you know. There are 9 others. And one of them is this chemical tsunami that we've unleashed on ourselves really in just the last 40 or 50 years. This is something that no human before about the mid-19th century had to deal with. You know, there were just no artificial chemicals in the environment or anything like that for the whole of the human race in the previous million years. So this is something we've done to ourselves, and it's starting to have very untoward effects on our health and our well-being and our, you know, mental abilities and things like that. So, you know, we need to tackle it with the same vigour that we're tackling climate change.
It is a modern problem, but there have been examples throughout history where the effect of chemicals on the human body were known. Can you go into some of them for us? They go back quite some time.
Oh, yeah, well, the Romans knew all about lead poisoning because they saw it affecting lead miners and mercury poisoning. It's in Roman medical books and things like that. So that's 2,000 years we've been aware of lead poisoning. And really, we've only just got, in the last 20, 30 years, got lead out of, you know, public usage, general public usage in petrol and paint and what have you. So we've been aware of these things for a long, long time. We started seeing industrial poisoning occur among people who swept chimneys or made matchsticks in the 19th century. And of course, World War I brought in poison gas, you know, harmless little chemical industry that produced dyes for ladies' dresses. Was turned over to making poison gas and high explosives for World War I. And ever since then, it's been a huge source of contamination throughout our environment, which we are unwilling participants in. I mean, every time we buy something, we trigger a chain of chemical reactions that we're just not conscious of.
Fossey jaw was another. This was a disabling ailment among workers in matchstick factories.
Yeah, the old Vesta matches, you know, when they dip them in phosphorus, it used to rot your face away. It was a hideous disease. So, you know, I mean, that was one of the more obvious industrial ailments. But, of course, we've been aware of asbestos that can cause lung diseases and cancers since the 1920s. But it's taken us from them to now to try to get rid of asbestos in most societies. Some societies still haven't got rid of it. So, you know, we're very slow to react on these things. And the problem is we're reacting to them one at a time, when in fact there's an avalanche of the things.
I do want to get to it, but I'm curious to just keep pursuing some of the history for a moment. How much of this has been associated with some of our tremendous scientific breakthroughs? For example, the Curies, and Marie Curie, and the radiation poisoning that accompanied medical workers working on that research. In fact, Curie herself may have died ultimately as a result of this. Has a lot of this accompanied some tremendous scientific breakthroughs, including medical breakthroughs and discoveries, but obviously equally just unleashed chemicals that, as we're about to discuss, end up accumulating and triggering, as you say, chain reactions? Was it associated with breakthrough science?
Yes, very much. I mean, chemistry is the senior profession in science. It leads the pack. It defines the way we do healthcare these days. You know, you go to the doctor and you get a chemical prescribed for your ailment, whatever it is, even if it's caused by another chemical. So, you know, chemicals are totally ubiquitous, but they are triggered by these big industrial breakthroughs that we've made in the manufacturing mainly. Yes, Marie Curie is an interesting case. She didn't, in those days, they thought radiation was good for you, you know, and you could take a radium bath or something like that, and a small amount of radiation would stimulate the immune system or something like that, they believed. She used to walk around with test tubes full of radium in the pocket of her lab coat, and she died of aplastic anemia, which is a disease that is linked with radiation exposure. So, and quite a lot of medical workers in the 1920s, when radium was deemed a healthy thing, also died of that. But, you know, x-rays, when they were first invented, it took some while to discover that they could cause cancer if you overexposed people to x-rays. And that's why when you're at the dentist these days, they put a lead shield on your body before they photograph your teeth. So, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of situations like that where we've been exposed. And of course, since the 1970s, farmers have been heavily exposed to chemicals in agriculture, you know, in cropping and in livestock production. So you've got large industrial exposure of farmers around the world. But these things are everywhere. You can't avoid them. They hit you every minute of your life, every breath you take.
Let's talk about the consequences, because we are living longer, much, much longer than those who were chimney sweeps in the 19th century, let alone sooner. Some of these discoveries, x-rays being an example, some of these medical treatments that we have now are as a result of some of the scientists' work, as are some of the great, we're busy vaccinating people at the moment because of the great discoveries of science alongside. So this has been the problem. It has been a classic case of human advancement and then finding out the consequences of that human advancement, yeah? Can we get now to the point that you're trying to make this chemical chain reaction, the fact that in many instances, once these are part of us in our environment, they remain. They don't break down, they remain and they accumulate.
And they're in very, very large amounts. I mean, we produce around about 200 billion tons of chemicals deliberately and accidentally in the course of what we do worldwide every single year. You know, so the farmer ploughs his paddock, the soil goes into the river, that has a chemical reaction in the river. If it blows through the air, it can make you allergic, or it can indeed contain poisons. So even things like soil erosion, particularly the wastes from mining, can be very toxic, as well as the chemicals that we produce industrially and purposefully. So, you know, this inundation is all right. It's five times larger than our climate emissions. Get that. This is a problem five times bigger than climate change. It kills 10 times as many people as climate change currently kills. It kills about four times as many people as COVID has killed. So this is a problem that's going absolutely out of sight. It's like a submarine. You can't see it, but it's there and it's a menace. And people are not aware of the scale of it. That's the thing. People are conscious that chemicals are not good for you and you shouldn't have too many of them and this and that. They're simply not aware of the bath that they are now exposed to day by day.
How then do we reconcile our longevity? Is it simply that these are the ways we will die now, the cancers and so forth? We know we've also we've got high death from heart attack, which many will say is now relating to nutrition and excess nutrition rather than what people used to die of, which was malnutrition.
Yeah, well, when you get into the statistics, basically, life expectancy is based upon history, right? So it's based upon the accumulated history up until this moment, or up until when you did the study, that tells you what people's life expectancy is. It doesn't predict the future. Okay, life expectancy does not predict. Now, life expectancy is already starting to come down, particularly in countries like the United States of America, where healthcare is falling apart, and there's very high levels of pollution also. So I wouldn't count on the fact that we're living longer lives in some societies as a guarantee for everybody, because it's not. And yes, you're right. Different diseases are replacing the familiar ones. So more people die of cancer now than die of infection. But the United Nations World Health Organization says roughly 13.7 million people die every single year as a result of exposure to chemicals and diseases in their environment. Okay, so it's environmental poisons, as they're known. Now, that's at least 10 to 12 million people dying from chemicals. That's about a quarter of all human deaths. So this is a very, very big thing. And every single year, that's 10, 12 million people dying as a result of chemicals. That's the biggest act of deliberate homicide that has ever taken place in human history. It's far bigger than World War II. So we've really got to start thinking about this issue and cleaning up the environment in which we live.
What is the threshold for environmental exposure as? Is it listed as a primary cause of death? Like, is there a threshold where it becomes the primary cause of death? Because your whole point is that all of us are full of this stuff. So at what point is it determined that my death or your death is as a result of chemical exposure?
Well, at the point where you get cancer or irretrievable depression and commit suicide, there is no absolute threshold, because these things are all around us. And we actually, scientifically, we have very little idea what effect they have in combination. We don't understand what the mixtures of chemicals are doing. We can point at, say, lead or mercury and say, well, it has this effect on the growing brains of children and things like that. But or it poisons babies in the womb and what have you. But we really have no idea what the combined effect is. But we're seeing a mass of new conditions, principally brain diseases, I might add, things like conditions like depression, autism, ADHD, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. These things have all really emerged into public view in the last 30 or 40 years. I mean, they were there in the background before, but never at the rates that we're seeing today. So something is happening. Now, think about this. A baby, a newborn baby, when it's born, if you test the first poo it takes, the one that it has taken from its mother's blood supply, that poo contains 1.2 million pieces of plastic. Right, plastic is a very good example of chemical pollution. It's ubiquitous. It is in every single person. Now, it's in your brain. It's in my brain. It's in the baby's poo when the baby comes out of its mother, because the plastic particles are so tiny. They have infiltrated through the mother's food supply and her air breathing into her blood supply and into the baby. So that the baby is already poisoned when it enters the world. And this is a totally new phenomenon. We're producing children who are already poisoned. And then when they take their first drink of their mother's milk, according, again, to the World Health Organization, looking worldwide, that drink contains pesticide. And so basically the baby is getting walloped before it's even started. And nobody has asked its permission to poison it. It doesn't consent to this. It's all so that baby is not going to enjoy a healthy, long life like we, like the one you illustrate. It's in trouble from the word go.
Earth Detox is the book. Julian Cribb is its author. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. 21 minutes past 10 it is. Do we know, can we know, how many industrial chemicals there are?
It's a very hard thing to estimate because of the secrecy that you mentioned. The big chemical corporations like to keep their formulation secret because it's to do with their profits and their industrial competitiveness. So they don't tell people what they're working on or what it's going to be used on. Only when they get to registering the chemical do they register even a little bit of this, and a lot of it still stays secret. So basically we used to think there was the previous estimate about 4 or 5 years ago was that there was 80,000 chemicals. worldwide. Then that was bumped up by the EU to 144,000 chemicals. And last year, a Swiss group estimated that there were 350,000 chemicals. So there's a heck of a lot more chemicals being churned out by industry. And the volume is growing. At the start of this century, there were about 1.2 billion tons of man-made chemicals. There are now about 2.5 billion tons of man-made chemicals. So that's a third of a ton for every single person on the planet. And there's going to be 5 billion tons of man-made chemicals by the mid-century. So this is an industry that's growing like Topsy. It's out of control. It's not being regulated in any sensible way. Out of those 350,000 chemicals, we have banned 21, right? 21 in the last two decades. So we're banning them at the rate of one a year. It's going to take us a third of a million years to ban the rest if they're toxic. So most of these chemicals, we don't even know whether they are toxic or not, because industry is not required to conduct toxicity trials. So the big problem, unlike climate change, where we've got scientists counting CO2 molecules every day, we don't know how big the problem is, and we don't know how toxic it is. It's just going on in the background.
What is the scale of the industrial chemical industry worldwide?
Well, we produce about 2.5 billion tons of industrial chemicals, many of which may be perfectly harmless, but most of which probably are causing some harm in combination with other chemicals or on their own, or when they break down to form another compound, et cetera, et cetera. So we just simply don't know. There's this kind of mythology going around that if you spray a crop with herbicide, the herbicide disintegrates and disappears. You know, that's not the case. You know, a lot of these chemicals are not water soluble. They hang around for a long time. We're particularly worried now about what they call forever chemicals, which is things like PFAS, the stuff in fire foam suppressants and fire suppressants, and things like that. These are chemicals that last a very long, long time, like DDT. DDT lasts 30, 40, 50 years because it's a very tough molecule. It was designed to do that, to be a tough molecule. But the trouble with a tough molecule is it doesn't break down. It goes on causing whatever damage it causes. So these things are everywhere. Now, we've heard about the plastic in the ocean, you know, 8 billion tons of plastic that humans have emptied in the ocean since plastic was invented. The trouble with that is that plastic not only breaks down into finer and finer particles, so small that they can penetrate your brain or the mother embryo barrier, but also that each of those particles can also carry other chemicals with it, like a little taxi. So the plastics in our life are spreading around the place. And a lot of the plastics, you know, in infants and newborn babies come from the plastic bottle it drinks its milk from and things like that, or they come from the mother's environment before the baby was born. So we're shrouded in these things from the word go.
You point out in the book that we're very good at training one risk for the other. You cite the phasing out of HFCs, the products that were fueling the ozone hole in the ozone layer, only to replace them with another chemical that's worse for global warming. Where is it that there's a big breakdown in the system, in the chemists perhaps creating these chemicals in the first place, having to prove not only their efficacy, but their safety and their wider impacts? Because we do see at least some of those requirements on food production, say, in many countries. We certainly see it in pharmaceutical and human therapies. Where is it missing in the system?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it's missing, first of all, in the training of chemists. They are not taught, unlike doctors who take an oath to first do no harm. When a doctor graduates from university, medical school, she or he takes an oath to do no harm. I think that chemists should be required to take the same oath. Now, the thing is, you can't blame the chemists. They're working for a big corporation that wants to make a lot of money. And we're talking about the biggest enterprise on earth here when we talk about petrochemicals, because chemicals mostly come from the oil and the coal industries. They're mostly byproducts of petroleum. And so they're part of, you know, the climate-denying global fossil fuels combine, coal, oil and natural gas. And that's a $7 trillion industry. It's the most powerful industry on earth. And it either owns or controls governments all around the world. You know, when it says jump, the United States government, the Australian government, they jump. This is a very big and very powerful industry. And it has fought regulation, health regulation, environmental regulation. It has fought it tooth and nail for over half a century. And it's basically very successful. It's the same story on a larger scale as the tobacco story.
You're not safe when you're dead either, and well, rather that the planet isn't, because what happens when we die to the toxic substances in our bodies?
Well, if you're buried in a standard urban graveyard, obviously, you know, as you decay, they go back into the groundwater and people drink them. So, you know, a lot of these things, the very tough things, keep on cycling, particularly heavy metals and things like that, keep on cycling through other human beings. But the other side, which is very disturbing, is that scientists have found that if somebody is severely poisoned, very often this does what's known as epigenetic damage. That means that it changes their genes in some minute way, and they then pass that change on to their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. So it is possible that if a father is poisoned, his great-great-grandkids may even suffer from the same disease. Now, this has really only mainly been proved in laboratory animals, but there's very disturbing evidence that genetic damage goes a long way down the heritability chain, and it can be triggered, as I say, by an episode of chemical poisoning. So we need to be aware of that as well. We're passing this curse. It's like a pharaonic curse. We're passing it on to our grandkids, and we should not do that. We should not deprive our children and grandchildren of the right to live in a clean, healthy world.
Well, you've got a 10-point plan for a detox. I don't know how much of that applies to an individual's agency, because you can spend a lot of time reading what's on the back of food packets or what's on the back of cleaning products, let alone clothes, fry pans. We've learned a bit about from Rob Bellott's work. You mentioned the Forever Chemicals and his work on Teflon and the Forever Chemicals. So the individual's left fairly overwhelmed by what they can or can't do. What can they do, and what is the rest of your 10-point plan for a detox from all this?
Well, as I pointed out, the petrochemical industry owns and controls an awful lot of the world's governments. It has huge influence, much more influence than we do as voters, right? But in this thing, if we do not solve this, we as consumers do not solve this problem, we're going to be poisoned for the rest of history, right? Because this industry is going to keep on churning this muck out. It's never going to be controlled by regulation. Regulation has failed utterly worldwide, as I've indicated. I mean, it's important to have regulation, but it's not going to protect you. So the only choice you've got is to choose to buy organic food, or choose to buy, organic cotton T-shirts, whatever it is, to choose products that are low in chemicals, that contain no plastics. Now, I know many young mothers who they've banned plastic from the house. No plastic toys, no plastic bottles or eating utensils, nothing for the baby. They don't use petroleum to wrap it up in blankets and things, and its mattress, they go for natural products. I'm told by my daughter that I can only buy wooden toys for the grandkids, and I think this is totally sensible. And in the end, consumers control giant multinational corporations, because if they swing away from the products of those corporations, they're sending the market signal. Now, I know that sounds, little me, what can I do about a giant corporation? The answer is, with 100 million other human beings and people are forming those alliances on the internet, you can do an awful lot. And there are already groups on the internet that will embargo the products of large companies if they're made with slavery, for example, or if they're made with toxic chemicals, or if they're made with by cutting down the rainforest or something like that. And there are large hordes of consumers around the world now who are very aware of the damage that they do when they consume. Every act of consumption has chemical consequences. You've got to think about that. Every object that you buy has a chemical trail that goes all the way back to the corporations and all the way back to the environment. And you're not only poisoning yourself, you're poisoning the whole of life on Earth by this system, because these chemicals are now moving around the world in a gigantic circulation called the anthropogenic chemical circulation. You know, it's like a river of these things that we've unleashed, and we've got to change that. So, you know, we can do it. It's already being done. We just need to do it a bit harder. We need to be more thoughtful consumers. We need to educate consumers better. We need to teach kids not to choose plastic products, but to choose natural products or natural clothing rather than clothing that's been produced by petrochemical means. That's the only way we're going to clean up the world. But, you know, fashion catches on very fast, and this is a fashion.
Thank you, Julian. Julian Cribb, science author. Earth Detox is the latest book, How and Why We Must Clean Up Our Planet.